everybody, to the Aris Meyer Podcast. How are you doing today? Today I have a very special guest, one of my longtime best friends, who is super interesting and is taller than me and really cool. Ladies and gentlemen, Akina Cox. How you doing, Akina?
How many people are taller than you? I feel like that's a lot.
Shut up. I mean, a lot of people are taller than me, but you're like way taller than me. But yeah, how you doing? What's up?
Good. I'm good. Drinking my tea.
Nice. I have a little Starbucks here. It's a grand evening. So tell the people about you. Where did you grow up? Who are you?
I grew up mostly on the Jersey Shore. I was born in New York, but we moved before I could remember that time. So
you were born in New York and then you grew up in New Jersey?
Mm-hmm.
What's it like living in New Jersey? Because the only New Jersey stuff I know is like Sopranos, Bruce Springsteen lyrics. Is it cool?
So I could see why some people would want to live in some of the areas.
That's like not like a really great endorsement.
It's funny, when I moved to LA, like the Jersey Shore TV show is really popular and everyone kept asking me if it was like the Jersey Shore. But which I thought was ridiculous because we're in LA where everyone knows like everything's made up.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't feel like my childhood at all. That being said, after we moved from New Jersey, my brother sent me an email like a few years later with a photo. And he was like, I didn't think I knew any of these people. And then I realized I knew all of them. But it was just everyone after we left got like 4 degrees more orange. And uh-huh. We like couldn't. They were unrecognizably orange.
It was like all your childhood friends, like Pauly D, Snooki, all the people you went
those
to high school with.
Those people aren't actually from New Jersey.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, Snooki
I didn't
is
know
not
that.
From New Jersey.
Where's Snooki from?
I don't know. I've never watched the show.
But
I feel like it is, if you want to know like what it is like, I would say the area I'm from is more like Sopranos, Bruce Springsteen.
So what does that mean? Like, I've never lived on the East Coast. I've only ever lived in California. But what is it about New Jersey? Because so many people that are from there, like, really are proud to be from there.
I feel like it's a chip on our shoulders because New York is right next door and gets, like, all the fame and fortune. And so we are like, oh, we do all the work. We have the stinky factories. Like, the Giants and the Jets play on New Jersey territory, like in the Meadowlands, but they're New York teams because that's cooler. And so I feel like it's this like we're the losers, and so we just own it.
Yeah. Which do you like, the Giants or the Jets more?
I don't like football because I feel like it preys on people's brain injuries. But if I did like a team, I would have to like the Philadelphia Eagles.
Next subject.
So my uncle loves the Eagles so much. He was actually like in a bad accident and was in a coma. And the first word when he came out of the coma was Eagles. And I lived in Philly for a short time. And like, he like made me like watch like a few different sports games.
Oh, the sports games, yeah.
Because he had tried to explain things to me because he was like, I don't want you to get beat up walking around.
Who's gonna beat you?
No one did. It was fine. He was just worried that someone would like jump out on the street and quiz me about Allen Iverson or something.
Yeah, of course, as they do in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
Okay, so you're a kid. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what your childhood was like in New Jersey. Like, did you just go to regular school? Did you homeschool?
I did go to regular school. I feel like there's a way I can talk about my life that makes it seem like kind of normal, where I'm like, oh, I did go to regular school.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, in second grade, I dropped out and I like homeschooled for a while. I'm saying that in quotes because uh-huh. My mom got really fed up with me and left me some notebooks. And I feel like this is like a common theme among church kids because I've listened to some of your recent episodes.
Yep.
So I bounced around a bit, let's say that. And then I went back to public school for a while.
Okay.
New Jersey and the East Coast is like very segregated. And so we moved from one town, which was like maybe majority minority, where there was like a large black population, and like Puerto Rican. And then we moved like a mile away, and then like the town is like 96% white. And so it felt a little bit moving to this town, like I lived in the Stepford Wives, like especially when I'm from our church background, where like it's also pretty multicultural, to just go to everyone is fucking Irish or maybe Italian is very weird. It feels like a horror movie.
Yeah, and there's little second grade Akina who dropped out of school, pack of cigarettes rolled up in
My
her
name was,
sleeve.
first of all, my name was Akina, which was like already like all the girls knew. Like
Yeah.
she's weird. Like my name wasn't Lauren. Like it
Yeah.
was like already a problem from the beginning. So I wasn't allowed to watch TV. My parents were very strict. Like I was a good church girl, and so I just had no hope of fitting in.
Yeah. Wow. So you're growing up in New Jersey. You're going to school. You didn't watch TV. What did you do? Like, what? How did you spend your
I
free
read
time?
books all the time. Like, I want to say, like, I feel like sometimes that sounds like a fun thing. Like, oh, reading books. That's great. We want kids to read books. But it was like an addiction where there actually, for most of our time there, we lived on a house that was like one or two houses away from a large park. Like a municipal park, and on the other side of the park was our town library. So from like maybe 6 or 7, I was able to ride my bike to the library, and I would go every day. My limit that they imposed on me, or like my mom imposed on me, was 3 times a day
To the library.
to the library. The librarians had my library card always on their desk, like out on top of their desk, because I would come in every day.
Damn, you were like customer of the month every month.
Yeah. And she, oh yeah, like any of those any of those games that you could play and win things from reading, and like I won them by like hundreds of books. But also my little brother was dyslexic, and he had a hard time reading, so I would also take out books to read aloud to him. So I was like, yeah, I was just reading everything.
When I was growing up, like my family was pretty poor, so the library was where we would go to get books, but also like movies,
Yes.
magazines, the computer. Did you do
Yes.
that stuff too?
All the movies. Because like once every week or two, we would have a babysitter, or we were allowed to have like a family movie night. And oh my God, it's so embarrassing to say this because I should have seen it so much earlier. But my parents were like, oh, your babysitter is coming and she's bringing her TV so you can watch it.
She brought a TV.
No, we had a TV in the basement that when like the babysitter came, they just like pulled it out of the basement and plugged it in on our living room and was like, look it, she's so nice. She brought her TV so you could watch a movie with her.
My gosh.
And it was like, I was like 14 by the time I was like cleaning out the basement, I found the TV and I was like, oh, this
Oh
is.
my God. The family TV. So were they like sneaking down there late at night to watch like
No,
Fox News
it
or
was like
something?
under like a blanket. It was like not
Wow.
hooked up downstairs.
That's funny. Did you guys have, I remember when we go to the library, they only had so many movies, so we would like
Right.
rent the same fucking four movies over and over,
Yeah.
you know, whether
Yeah.
it was Sister Act 1 and
Oh
2
my
or
God,
like, you
Sister Act
know.
was the fucking
Oh
best.
yeah, I stand by Sister Act. It's one of
It's
the best movies.
so good.
Both of them
Did
are
you
incredible.
read that Carrie Fisher like helped with the script?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. She apparently she was so great. I forget what they called it, like a fixer or something. She made all the scripts funnier.
Dang. Yeah, those I still stand by both of those Sister Act movies. I remember the second movie, but I fell in love
So
with Lauryn
good.
Hill. I was just
Yeah.
like, damn.
When the sunlight coming in the classroom while she's talking and singing,
Yeah.
you're just like,
I
who's that
remember
beautiful person?
as a kid when there's the scene where she's playing piano and the nun is watching her and her friend, and she's playing piano, and her friend starts singing His Eyes on the Sparrow.
Yeah.
And then Lauryn Hill starts singing, and I just melted. I was just like, oh my God. And she's like an incredible human being.
Yeah, there are some of those hymns I had not thought of in a while, the soundtrack of Sister Act, but I'll tell you, when we found out that Trump had coronavirus, I played the Sister Act soundtrack in my car.
Oh, my God.
Because there's some really great, like, hallelujah songs.
Like, oh, happy days?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Hey, man, it's a celebration.
It was just a very stressful time, and that was a fun...
Oh, my gosh.
Interlude.
So you're growing up, you're in New Jersey, and then your parents move you to Philadelphia.
No.
Where'd you go after New Jersey?
First of all, I just want to finish the, like, reading thing, because wanted to say, like, years later, I was reading, I found this, like, blog or something of, like, kids who grew up in, I don't want to say abused households, but, like, you know, stressful, maybe neglected houses. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people on this message board were talking about how they were really good readers. And it was like this thing where we were just like reading to escape.
Totally.
And it was just like, it felt like I was like eating food and I like couldn't stop eating or something. You know, like I was just like flipping the pages, like trying to stay inside of a book or something.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, oh, yeah, it's great to have kids read. But I don't know if they need to read exactly like I did.
I mean, even
stressful.
Even still, like, you're the kind of person that'll be like, hey, I read this book. You should read it. And then you'll bring over, like, fucking four books. And I'm like, ah, I can't read four books. Like,
I still can read pretty fast from that.
You put them down. You're a book reader.
But, yeah, so my parents did not move us to Philly. So basically, I know you're a poor California boy, you don't understand East Coast geography.
I don't.
But basically, like, think of New Jersey as kind of like, let's say my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe like one, or not a hand, that's a stupid thing. Like, let's say it's like a lima bean or something.
Okay.
The top right is where New York City is. So if you're in that, like the north of New Jersey, you're like, New York suburb.
It's right across the river.
Yeah. But if you're like on the lower left hand side, that's exact, like across the river is Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're a suburb anywhere you
are. Oh, I see. So it's right there.
Yeah. So that's why I was like the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, like for a lot of New Jersey people, that's like their home base too.
But I see.
I was central New Jersey, so I could have picked either one.
So you lived there until high school?
Until I was 16. And then my parents moved us to South Korea.
And you lived in South... That's so funny. So many people mention moving or, like, going to Korea as kids. And to people that didn't grow up in the Unification Church, I'm sure they're just like, why is every person you talk to fucking going to Korea? This is so bizarre. So you went to Korea... Why did you go to Korea?
So my mom, let's see. So my mom, what version do I say? My mom said that God told her we needed to.
To go to Korea.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty standard.
But I have an alternate theory,
mm-hmm.
which is, so my mom, before she joined the church, went to art school. And she wanted to be an artist. And then she joined the church. And there were a few other church members like that who went to art school and then joined the church. And some of them, like, kept painting, even though some church theology said, like, you shouldn't have anything to do with the arts because it's evil and satanic. But there was, like, a small group of people, including my mom, who really loved the arts and were like, hey, it's a manifestation of God's love or some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And... one of the True Children, True Father's oldest son, Hyojin.
Cokehead.
Was like, kind of gave them cover. He was friends with some of the artists. And so they had shows together because they were like, we're going to create a new world based on this new art. and they had shows, and sometimes they had shows in Tokyo because there was a church-owned gallery there. And so my mom would come to Japan and Korea like every year or two to have a show with the other church people. And she had so much fun there one year that she like came back and she was like, we should move there and create like a culture of heart. That's what they called it, a culture of heart.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll save everyone from satanic evil art culture. And
by creating new and better art.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like she just wanted to hang out with her friends.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I mean, but also, yeah. I also could totally believe that she thought God was talking to her.
So from the time I've known you, you've always been an artist or into art. Were you growing up also like an artist because your mom was an artist?
So when I was really small and reading all the time, I hated art and I didn't want anything to do with it because that was like my mom's thing, which meant that it was dorky.
Yeah.
But I also noticed that anytime I made a move to that, my mom and my dad would be really happy because it was like, oh, Akina will grow up and like take on this mantle. I always try and compare it to like how like there's like baby Scientology actors and stuff where it's like, oh yeah, do this, and then
they're like kind of nurturing them and making them what they want them to be.
Yeah, and then like, and then it'll bring good PR to us and it'll just be like a good thing. And so I feel like they kind of encouraged me to do the stuff, and I still didn't really like it, but it's weird, like over time I was like, well, I do like this one artist. Okay, I like this group of artists. And then that circle just kept expanding until I was like, oh, I do like art a lot.
Do you feel like there was ever times when you were a kid that you made art and your parents were critical of it? Like, that it was not God's art, you know, that it was like, I guess the church has fallen, but that it was like influenced, you know, by...
So some church people thought like to make art that was heavenly, it needed to like just show like the Messiah, true father, and his family or something.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents didn't subscribe to that at all. So sometimes my mom would say that I messed up my painting or something. Like, she wouldn't necessarily love everything I did, but it wasn't like because she thought it was satanic.
Yeah.
She thought like if you're a good person, that like whatever you make will be like have like good spirits attached to it or something. I don't know. It's been a while since I've like tried to remember this, like the reasoning behind everything.
Yeah, it's when you're in it, it's all so easy to like to talk about. It's almost like being from a country and not living there for like 50 years.
Yeah.
You forget like the normal everyday.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's wild. Okay, so you and your brother go from,
oh my god,
New Jersey to Korea. Tell me about that.
Not even to like, oh, South Korea, oh, you would think Seoul, but mm-hmm. No, we were an hour and change north of Seoul, which, if you know anything about geography, again, is where the border of the DMZ is.
So you were near the DMZ.
We were not in the DMZ, but we were in the buffer zone around the DMZ.
Holy shit, and yeah. Why did you go there specifically, of all places?
Well, one of my mom's friends, who is a Korean church artist, lived kind of near there.
Oh.
And then they found a house they liked there.
So what did... I know... So you were there for, like, what, 2 years?
I was just there for, like, one full year. And then I convinced my parents to let me go back to art school.
Yeah.
Because this is why I think I actually started liking art. Is because it was, like, the only time I was ever given freedom.
Hmm.
Like, I could go to... Like, my parents didn't really let me out... Like, they were very controlling and they didn't really let me outside of the house even that much. But like, if I wanted to go to an art class, that was fine.
Ah, so it was kind of your ticket to being normal.
Yeah, like I didn't go to PLA with everyone. I went to like an all-girls art school in Philly for like an all-girls art camp in Philly for a month.
I would have much rather gone to that.
It was really fun. It was so fun because I was like totally insulated, like didn't know anything, and then like was surrounded by all these really nice girls who were making art, and it was amazing.
Damn, that sounds cool. I would do that now.
Yeah, it was great. You're like, I'll do anything if it's just me and a bunch of ladies.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. Sign me up. So without, you don't have to get too far into it, but like, what was it like for that year? I mean, did you just feel like isolated and alone, or was it like that kind of year, exciting because it was new and different?
That year was really terrible. It was like, I didn't want to move from the town, even if I didn't love the town I grew up in. No, like, you don't want to leave. And especially, this was the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, internet was barely a thing. Like, to move away from, like, everyone I had grown up around, even the church kids that I grew up around, like, and then all of a sudden be 7,000 and change miles away on the opposite side of the world without being able to speak the language, and essentially now stuck in a little apartment for most of that time with just my mom and my little brother. It was brutal.
I mean, look, you said you didn't want to live around white people, so your mom moved you to the other side of the world.
Like, actually, after a while, they let me go to Korean classes in Seoul by myself, and Seoul is like, and Korea is, like, wonderful to visit if you don't speak the language, because mm-hmm. it has an easy transportation system that's relatively cheap. It's color-coded. I was able to figure my way around, and that was fine. But, like, when we first moved there, it was, like, the worst winter they had had in, like, 40 years. And, like, sometimes our front door, like, welded shut from the ice.
Damn.
And so I was, like, in a, like, studio or one bedroom apartment for the first few months with my family while they were trying to figure out where we were gonna live, and like, yeah, just like welded shut. It felt like The Room or whatever that horror movie is.
Oh, just trapped.
Yeah.
Jesus. So while you were there, you decided that you wanted to go to art school in California?
I wanted to go to art school in Philadelphia. So I moved by myself to Philadelphia, and I was there for almost 2 years, and then I moved to LA after.
Uh-huh. And when you moved to LA is when I met you.
Yes. No, actually, you met me before that, because I was living, no, you're right. Because we met in Northern California, not LA.
Oh, somebody introduced you to me, right?
No, what happened was, I was living in Philly. I decided to transfer to go to CalArts, which is just outside of LA. When I was out in LA, I started meeting all the LA BCs, or Blessed Children, and I would hear the name Eris like all the time, and I didn't know who this person was. And one of my good friends, Liz, who was like an artsy BC down here, who I felt like I could totally relate to,
She was
like,
cool.
Yeah, she was like, oh, this Eris and this Paul live in Northern California. And I have relatives up in Northern California. So she was like, when you go up there, make sure to say hi to them. So my relatives in Northern California don't like the church at all. And so we invented this whole thing. Do you remember?
Oh, now I'm starting to remember.
Liz was like, oh, it'll be so much fun and they'll totally play along, but we'll make up this backstory about how you know them from Philadelphia.
That's right.
So you came and got me at my grandma's house, and you guys were so sweet and nice to her, and we like stumbled over some weird, like,
I think I was from Pittsburgh. I don't think I was from Philadelphia. I think I was from Pittsburgh, and then I was just praying she wouldn't ask me any, like, questions, because I would have no idea.
You made such a good impression on her. She, like, asked about you for, like, several years after. She'd Aww. Be like, what about your friend who ate those cookies with us?
Oh, yeah. She was so sweet. It was like, yeah. I mean, I, like, this is a weird thing to say, but I've always gotten along with older people.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Like, just, like, it's a vibe. We're just chilling, talking, tea, some cookies. Like, I'm so happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's right. So yeah, that is the first time. I totally forgot about that. That was in Berkeley.
Yeah, and then we hung out in Berkeley for an afternoon, and I hadn't met you guys before. And I think you guys took me to a Starbucks or something.
Of course.
And I was just so nervous to be around these cool guys that I had heard about for so long.
Oh my God. What were your first impressions of us? What did you think? Were you just like,
I think I was just, like, petrified that you guys, like, wouldn't like me and, like, I couldn't be a part of the cool kids club or something.
Ah, the KKK. Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. I remember meeting you and getting along with you, like, pretty, it was pretty easy to talk because you're, when you, I feel like whenever you meet new people, you let your barrier down, like, pretty quickly. Like, you're very friendly, you're very inviting. So I feel like it was, like, pretty easy to hang out with you. And then I moved back to Southern California, where I'm from, in L.A., and I rented a room from a family. And then somehow you also moved in and started renting a room from that same family, so we lived together.
Yeah, because while I was in Philly, I had started organizing these, like, art events for church kids. And
what was it? I remember that. BC Arts Fest?
Mm-hmm.
I never went, but I always heard about it.
Yeah. And like, Liz and then all of the Coxes, like, came out. Or Amy and Andrew. I was like, forgot his name for a second.
Wow. Well, we'll get to him. He's in the story later.
And Dannery and I think JJ came out, too. And, yeah, so they came out, and Andrew's mom had already said, like, hey, we're going to have a room available. If you're moving out here, like, let me know. Because, as I said before, there's not that many, like, artsy, like, church people. And so I felt like it was, like, a small community within a community where, like, if you're somehow friendly to the arts, like, you look out for each other.
Everyone kind of gets on. Yeah. Yeah, that's totally true.
Because it was, like, hated by everyone else.
We don't do art.
Which, looking back, makes sense. Because you're like, oh, the one true family member that was, like, really into the arts was also, like, a really abusive cokehead.
Yeah. Was he into art? I know that he played
his
music.
His best friend was one of the church artists.
Oh, I see.
So I think they would, like, hang out and get high together.
He was, like, connected. That makes sense.
Yeah. So he, like, kind of, like, folded art under the music umbrella.
Ah.
But he was very abusive to, like, the staff members who were just, like, the first generation, like, people like our parents who just, like, worked for him as, like, drivers or secretaries or something. Like, he would, like, beat them up and stuff.
Yeah, I've heard shitty stories about him.
Yeah, so no wonder, looking back, I'm like, oh, yeah, no wonder why everyone was, like...
I hate art. It's the worst.
I mean, besides their weird, like, obsession with, like, communism and, like, social realism, like, they were like, yeah, Russian social realism is terrible. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Does anyone do that anymore, though?
It's funny because, like, I've had such mixed interactions with older church members. Some of them are so down with music and art and talking about that kind of stuff. And then some of them that I've talked to, like, I remember when I was a kid, I was helping this church member, like, my dad made me help him, like, move some shit. So I was in the truck with him and we were driving to go pick something up. And the song Imagine came on the radio. And, you know, I turned it up and I was, like, singing along. And he turned it off and he's like, we don't listen to this song. This is a socialist Marxist. John Lennon was such a terrible blah, blah, blah. And I was like, did you listen to the words at all? But he's like, imagine there's no heaven. Like, this is propaganda. And I was like, do you need to just chill out, bro?
I remember hearing grumblings about that song. Actually, about moving, I had this job working as an assistant to this gallery owner for a while, and she needed help moving. And so, like, I corralled, like, a few BCs into helping her move. And like, she, like, fed everyone pizza and whatever. And then at the end of the day, like, paid everyone money.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, everyone was just like, oh, I thought we were doing this for free. Like,
it was like, it's because we were conditioned our whole lives to just do stuff for people without valuing
our
time.
Yeah, she just, like, gave everyone, like, a couple hundred bucks each or something.
Wow.
And they were just like, what?
I'm worthy of love and attention.
I thought we were doing this for pizza.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so you moved to LA, you rent that room, and we lived together in Monrovia, and you were going to CalArts at the time, right? So you were, like, commuting to and from CalArts. Were you working while you were going to school, or were you?
Not.
How did you go to school? Scholarship?
With partial scholarship, a lot of loans. I worked a little bit as an assistant art teacher.
And what, I mean, that must have been kind of shocking for you to go to art school, right? Because it's about as far the other way as you can go from growing up in a conservative kind of cult like we did to go to like a free-for-all art school. Because CalArts is kind of known for being wild, right?
CalArts is very wild. It's very crazy. I mean, it can be conservative in its own way, in that any institution can be. But there's definitely, like, what church people would think of as being wild, like, nudity and, like, it's the performances where, like, people hurt themselves on purpose or, you know, like, dancing around naked or whatever. Yeah, it was a shock. I think I did feel, like, abandoned at first because also at first I didn't live with the Coxes. I lived in a dorm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Before you moved down here, I was in a dorm for a while and I felt kind of like surrounded because I also had no idea how to drive. Mm-hmm. And of course, like I was told my whole life that like outsiders have like bad spirits around them. And especially if they're gay, they have more bad spirits around them.
Yeah.
And so I really loved, like I liked all my classmates, but I also felt like scared, like I was like living in enemy territory or something.
I mean, that's about as enemy territory as it gets.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was definitely like scary, but it was also scary because I liked them, you know, and then that was scary too.
Do you feel like living with you, when I lived with you, one of the things you taught me a lot about was feminism. That was like one of the first kind of, me and you would have conversations about philosophy and music and growing up, and our rapport was immediately like really fun because we both are like teasers. We both like to like kind of, you know, push buttons and have fun. You taught me a lot about feminism and we would talk about like different philosophies and stuff. But I don't know, did you grow up learning about feminism or was that something you learned kind of in art school? Like where did that part of you come from?
Both. My mom, as I said, before she became a church artist, she went to art school and she went to like a feminist art program. Like it was in the 70s. It was brand new. It was taught by these women artists. And so she had a background of like women's studies or something. That said, she joined the church and then was around my dad who would like talk about feminazis and stuff, like Rush Limbaugh talk. So it was weirdly like, it was this weird amalgamation of like right wing and feminism in our house where like there was the idea of like women can do everything that men can do, but also like these feminazis are crazy. So like, yeah, that was very strange. And I would see, like, my mom, because she was really one of the only women in the, like, church artist circle, I would hear, like, she and my dad would talk about, like, ways in which my mom was, like, pushed out or mistreated or told to, like, go get the cookies for the reception or something. You know, so, like, yeah, she had that, like, little, almost, like, little flame of feminism that, like, wouldn't die even in the church. But, of course, it, like, also came out in weird ways. Like, don't be a slut and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it was definitely, like, weird. And then when I got into art school, there, like, I took a really great class with a feminist scholar who really, like, set me straight on a few things.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird growing up in the church, right? Because it is super patriarchal and it is like very like know your place.
Yeah.
Women make babies and they're the homemakers. But then they're like, but we also empower women. We have Women's Federation and we put women in leadership positions. And you're like, wait a minute. Like these seem like when you're in the church, it makes sense. But when you take a step back and you just look at like the different positions women are in and how even at the highest positions, there's still kind of somebody telling them what to do and like a standard. And, you know, they're still like kind of slut shaming and, you know,
there's never been any like women leaders really in the church. Like it's all like, if you think of like the leader of New York or the leader of LA, or it's like never been a lady.
I mean, I don't know because I don't know the history of the church that well. I know that there's a lot of famous women in the church that were like kind of like, these people brought so many members and, you know, whatever. But even they always were dominated by the local leader and then the Korean leader. And then it was like, you know.
But there is also this idea of, like, we're all God's children. We're all created equal. Like, God loves each one of us. So each one of us has value.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like very diametrically opposed, but you just get used to that in your head where you're like, yeah, I have just as much value as anyone else, but I'm also like not supposed to be a leader.
It's such a weird, when you're in it, it all makes sense, and it only takes one little moment of realization to be like, wait a minute. So you're going to art school, you're living in Monrovia with me. And that is when you got together with
Andrew, whose name I can't remember.
Yes. One of the biggest sweeties on earth, Andrew. So you guys got together.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah. 'Cause I didn't know him for a while. I just knew like his sister and his family because he was off doing church activities for like a good year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back, and he loved Calvin and Hobbes, and I love Calvin and Hobbes. And we just, like, quoted it at each other for a long time until we realized we were, like, best friends, and then we started making out.
Ah, yes. The dating process for church kids. Calvin and Hobbes and making out.
Secretly making out.
Oh, my gosh. So you guys got together, and then we went to Korea together. I got with someone at the same time, and then the four of us, like, had like a, it was like an engagement party for the four of us. Yeah, in Monrovia.
Okay.
There was like a party like congratulating both couples, and then we both went to Korea together.
Yeah.
And it's funny because someone sent me a picture from like Getty Images of like that blessing, and it's like us and a bunch of other people. I don't know if they want their name on the podcast, but just looking like so miserable, and it's hilarious that Getty Images chose like that picture of us just all looking like, get me the fuck out of here. But I remember being in Korea with you, and we only hung out a little bit because your parents still lived there, so like you guys didn't stay with us in Busan or anything.
No, there was like this whole like activity and like tour for all the couples who went over to get blessed at the same time, but by then, like, my parents had been living there for, like, about 5 years, and I had gone back for, when I only lived there for 1 year, but for years afterwards, I would go back for, like, 2 or 3 months at a time.
Hmm.
So it's very familiar, and so I just, like, we just, like, went to the blessing and then went back.
Yeah. Yeah, it was such a weird experience, but, it was just funny that we ended up all going together and then coming back. And I feel like we just kind of like, after that, the next couple of years, we kind of just built like a small tribe of friends, and we would hang out together and do more and more stuff. And then Andrew started going to CalArts as well.
Yeah.
So you guys both went to art school.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you went to art school, you kind of never left. You've been in LA. You became an LA person.
From the moment I moved to LA, I was like, I'm not leaving here. I have no idea. I just remember, in my memory, I'm in the back of someone's car with a convertible. But I don't remember who I knew at the time who had a convertible. But I just remember
nobody
like,
I knew.
No, it might have been some like college friends. But I was like in the back, and I was just like looking up at the sky and being like, "There's no clouds. I'm not leaving this place." Like, and it's funny because I don't mind weather, but I just moved here and felt like at home in a way I never felt in New Jersey. Like, I was always like the weirdo who didn't feel at home where I grew up. And I moved out here and I was like, oh, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, for sure. And almost immediately you fit in with like everybody here, you fit in with the group. And I remember going to when you graduated and Andrew graduated, there was like senior shows. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really go to CalArts too many times because it's kind of a drive to get up there.
Yeah.
But I remember going to your senior shows and like, I don't know much about art.
Right.
I only know like what I like and what I don't like. Yeah. But I remember going
that's
the to
the anyone knows though also.
Yeah, that's true. But I remember going and like I was with Jesse, Andrew's friend, and we walked in. Like, there's like the senior show, right? So there's like these spaces that each senior had their own space. And we were just like walking around, and there's a lot of boobs and buttholes, and you know, that I kind of expected that. But then we walk in this one room, and it was just like bare. It was like somebody had put up shelves and put up price tags for art on the shelves, but there was no art displayed, just price tags. And me and Jesse were just like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is like the most pretentious. Like, if you're making fun of artists on a skit, like, it was so crazy. But I always, it was funny because I would see your art, and you were actually like creating things. And I didn't grow up around artists at all, or like people that made art or paintings. So the only art that I knew was like stuff that I would go to a museum and see, like a, you know, a Botticelli or something.
Yeah.
And I could be like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I couldn't make that, so that's really cool to me. But I remember seeing your art, and what was interesting about it to me was you created a lot of, like, shapes and creatures and different things, but you also always – it felt like you attached meaning to it. So – and I'm sure this is normal for art. Like I said, I'm a newbie, but I would see your art, and then you would have, like, a little kind of, like, paragraph or something explaining, like, oh, I was reading this book, and then it made me think about this. And then those two things made me – create this thing. Is that like a formulaic thing that you learn in art school, or is that like your own, like your own way of creating art?
I feel like you just said that you don't really pay attention to art, but that was a really nice explanation.
I mean, it's just what I mean, you know, it just so happens that over the last 20 years all of my best friends became fucking artists, so I've only learned about art through, you know, a million shows now.
Yeah, I feel like that is a lot of the way I operate. I don't always have like a paragraph right under everything I do, but now I oftentimes will like write something, like a little book, make a little artist book or something to go along with a show. But wait, now I forgot your question. I feel like you just described everything perfectly.
It was just kind of, how do you create? Like, how do you create your art? Like, what the thing was, I went there and I saw the bullshit art, and I was like, what the fuck is this? But then I would see art like that you were making that had substance, and it was almost like, what did you know, it just felt like there's two different kinds of people at this school. So what did you learn there? Like,
there's a lot, I'm not saying that's like bad about CalArts, but there's a lot of terrible art everywhere. It's like every profession where, like, chances are if you play something random on Spotify, you're gonna hate it.
Uh-huh.
Or think it's like pretentious bullshit, or it's a musician that doesn't know how to play a scale.
Uh-huh.
So I go to galleries and all the time and look at a lot of art, and I think it's fine to look at a lot of art and not like most of it. I mean, there's a lot of art that I totally love, but I'm just saying, like, it's a good like 9 out of 10 shows that I'm not really interested in. So I think it's totally fine to not like a lot of art, is what I'm saying. But I don't know how I make art. I feel like it's one of those things that you have to reinvent the wheel, like, every time you do it. I remember at the end of my first year at CalArts, I had been tearing my hair out because nothing I was doing was working. And then finally I hit upon something. And I made this series of paintings of, like, bombers, like, American bombers from World War II and tanks. And I painted them pretty carefully painting for me. And then I would paint them, and then I would put, like, a pink or peach background on them. And they were really simple, but I felt like they just kind of felt like a description of my life in Korea, because we were living like in a militarized area, like this juxtaposition of like a gentle pink colors and then these like big machines. And I thought, oh my god, I've hit upon it. These are successful pieces. I'll just keep doing these for the rest of my life. And of course, like, I went back for summer break, and I came back and I tried to keep making them, and then they were all terrible, and I had to like totally throw them out and just like think of something new all over again. So I just like fail and fail and fail and then like find something. And sometimes it's like I had a show last year, and one of the pieces that a lot of people liked in the show was like a drawing that I had done that I hated, and I threw on the floor. Like, you know when you're like drawing or writing or something, and you're just like throwing work at a trash can on the other side of the room? Like, you're just like balling things up and throwing them in.
I usually yell Kobe when I throw it in, but yeah, go ahead.
So one of my pieces didn't make it into the trash can, and then a friend came by and like picked it up and was like, oh, this is the best thing you have in your studio.
Damn.
But it was, I don't know, there's some friends that I just trust to like, if they've seen my work long enough, they know me. Like, I know they see things in my work that I don't always see. Because sometimes when this happens with a lot of artists, but when I make a work, maybe I like it because it reminds me of something I've done in the past that's good. But it's not that this work is good. It's just familiar to me. And so I like it. And so it takes like a friend to be like, actually, that's not great.
Well, what I appreciate about your art is because I know you as a person, and we've known each other for so long, it's almost like me and you talk about like therapy a lot, about healing, about reading books.
And you still haven't gone to therapy, and you really need to.
Oh my God. I'm going to go. The pandemic's over. But, you know, it's what I like about your work is, you know, you have work about horses, about horse girls, about the Amazons, about it's like you read and then you're processing things and you're creating at the same time. You write zines, you know, small stories or articles about growing up in the church or about your life or about experiences you've had. And what's cool to me is to see like kind of your trauma coming out and it creating something, and then seeing other people who I don't know, like taking something from it, because I can see your personal touch in it because I know you, because we're friends. So, that's one thing that I think is really cool. Like when I go to your gallery and you're like a social butterfly at your gallery, like it's funny when I go there because I feel like when me and you were hanging out, you're always like, so like, oh, I don't, you know, I don't know. I'm a little bit shy. And then you go to the gallery you're fucking, you know, Paulie Walnuts, like walking up to everybody. How you doing? How you doing? Like, you know, it's just, it's hilarious to me.
All of a sudden my Jersey accent comes
out. Super. And you're like super confident and you're like, people are crowded around you like you're fucking, you know, you got the tablets and you're walking down the mountain.
People are going to believe you.
No, but it's, I don't know. It's just, it's really cool to see like your friends in their element. You know, like I would go to other friends too. Like, you know, I'd go to Quan Chai or Vince's shows at the, what's that gallery called? Nucleus?
I think.
I don't know. Or, you know, Young Nam or whoever. And it's just interesting because you see your friends create and you kind of know the inspiration because you kind of know them. But to see people interact with their work is like, it just feels good as their friend to be like, oh, someone is acknowledging Akina.
That's
they can see
I
it.
That's why I like this podcast, because I'm like, I feel like it's like seeing... No, I don't like making grand statements, but I feel like it's like seeing the essence of Eris or something, like, and everyone else can see it too.
Yeah.
And it's exciting.
It's funny because I have the same instinct as you. I want to crumple it up and throw it in the trash. And people are like, oh, that's good.
It's so exciting to watch other people make stuff because it's so stressful making something on your own.
But it's
very exciting to appreciate other people's work.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't... You were talking about different ways. I think there's many different valid ways of making artwork. But I do think that I make artwork differently than a lot of people. And I think that's like a little bit what you were getting at. And I actually got into trouble a lot in college for that.
For kind of doing your own thing rather than what they wanted you to do?
And it wasn't even like that they wanted me to do something. It's just that my work... Okay, so you know how we grew up, like, with a lot of, like, emphasis on, like, prayer and stuff? I feel like I was very into praying, and I, like, turned into that when I was a teenager and was in the middle of nowhere in Korea and had no one to talk to. It was, like, all about, like, journaling or going on a walk in the middle of rice fields and just, like, kind of in my head, like, praying and hoping that someone was listening. And it felt like... I just like had this weird, like, even when I left the church, I feel like I jokingly called myself a praytheist for a while because I just felt like I needed to articulate what I was going through out loud or in a journal, even if I didn't think anyone was listening.
Yeah.
And I think some of that comes out in my work somehow, because I feel like I make work almost like an animal or something. Like, it's just a different impulse than a lot of people making work today in the contemporary art world, where it's, and so when I was in school, like, my teachers would be like, sometimes you make work and it feels like you're not thinking about it, or they would say like really mean things. Like, after going through art school, I feel like you can do anything. Like, you can, any of those reality shows be pieces of cake. Because this is what I was told. I was told that I paint like an animal, really. They were like, you know those like famous elephants that paint? Like, you're like one of those. Someone told me that I paint like someone who's like handicapped, which is like totally like a ableist statement.
Yeah. The elephant one was cute. This one is...
They were like, you paint like someone who's institutionalized.
Little did they know.
Then they were like, you, like, it's just like this, I feel like art making comes from this same impulse of like, just like needing a problem around in my brain and like hoping to figure it out, kind of.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I can really describe it, but it just, I will say, like, in grad school, I offhandedly, because we were talking about witches, I mentioned that, like, I had found out that one of my ancestors was in a Salem witch.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in the group was like, oh, now your artwork makes a lot of sense, Akina. You're just a witch artist.
You're just a witch.
But I just feel like, it's not always like, I do read, and I don't think of myself as like a intellectually challenged person, but I feel like my work does come from someplace else sometimes. Like, it does, it's like this thing that I'm doing that's without words.
Hmm. Well, yeah. It's interesting to get back to kind of, when we live together and on, part of the reason I think that you and I get along so well is that we're both, the kind of people that are very protective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes from having siblings younger than us that we like felt very defensive over.
Yeah.
And I think that part of the reason that you and me stayed in the church so long, even though it was very clear for a while when we were hanging out that we were both, you know, having our doubts and not really into it, is because we had this sense of community and we wanted to kind of like support and be there for each other and like, you know, take care of each other. And I feel like there was a certain point, the final straw for me leaving the church was obviously when my brother came out.
Yeah.
And to me, like, kind of love and support have always, and I hate to use this word, trumped religion, dogma, because spirituality to me is like completely connected to the people I love.
Yeah.
Just in every way. And anything that could hurt them or not be good for them in any way to me was like the antithesis of spirituality.
Yeah.
So I feel like for me, when my brother came out and the church started criticizing him and people I knew started criticizing him, I was like, this is an easy choice for me. Like, you know, I even told him, you know, when I talked to him on the podcast, the minute he told me he was gay, I said, in my mind, you said we're gay, because that's how defensive I am of him. So I know that for you, you were in a very similar situation where, like me, you were kind of, you know, in certain crowds we would talk about the church, we'd have beers and we'd be like, this is fucking crazy, this is dumb.
Yeah.
Obviously there's a double standard, there's sexism, women are treated differently, women are, you know, whatever like every other religion, you know, subjugated and yeah. you know, made to feel ashamed of being a woman. But there's a certain point when your brother...
My brother came out.
Your brother came out.
Yeah. First he came out as bi, and then a couple years later he came out as trans, but I don't know, like, what he came out, or, like, I don't remember... He came out to me as bi. I don't know if that was, like, public mm-hmm. for a while. And then he came out publicly as trans. That was, like, fairly recent. That I think that was 2018.
Okay. Oh, so you were out before that then.
I was out, but I was in that stage of, well, the church doesn't work for me, but it's okay if it works for other people, and, like, let's all just get along or something, or I don't want to badmouth the church. And then as soon as I realized my brother was bi, I was like, fuck the church so hard. Mm. And that's when I really realized how what a fucked up institution it was. Because Jovia had come out earlier, and... It's really thanks to him and you that I've heard from my brother that, like, I feel like that's, like, why there's younger kids that are still alive today. Because they, like, Jovi was really the first one to come out.
And stay. A lot of people left and then came out. But I feel like Jove came out and was just like, hey,
and also, like,
call me, email me, message me.
Yeah, they came out so quietly, which is totally, like, especially, like, older... Second gen went through a fucking lot, and so this is no judgment on anyone, but I think, like, a lot of us didn't even know that some of them came out, like, after they had left. And yeah, Jovi came out, and then my brother said, like, watching Jovi come out and then, like, people, like, starting with you coming out and saying, like, hey, we support him, like, meant that it was safe for them, or they had someone to turn to. Do you remember when Jovi came out, though? I feel like you were like, I need to talk to you. And, like, we ditched church so you could tell me about it.
I don't exactly remember that, but I know that of all the people for me to have that conversation with, you would be one of the first people.
You called me and you were like, I haven't told anyone this. We walked around the Paseo in Pasadena and you were, like, really freaked out. I think he had told you, like, the day before.
Yeah.
And you told me not to tell anyone. And so I didn't tell Andrew. I didn't even tell Andrew, and for months I was, like, holding it, and then finally I realized, like, oh, yeah, everyone knows.
Yeah,
like,
everyone's always known. That's the thing. Yeah. But it's, like...
When I finally told Andrew, he's like, yeah, I've known Jovi since he was 10. I've known the whole time.
Yeah. Well, it's been a game my whole life because, you know, I've always been the super protective older brother. Mm-hmm. I've said before, whenever anyone would call him gay or, you know, whatever that other word or other words... I would beat the shit out of him. And I always knew. But I always wanted him to do things on his own terms, in his own time, in his own way. Yeah. So even when he came out to me, until he decided he was going to tell everyone, there was not anyone for me to talk to about it.
Yeah.
And I think, like a lot of kids in the church, our relationship with our parents, we don't share our deepest, darkest feelings or even our true selves with our families. So crazy. We have chosen families and friends that we can, like, have those conversations with. And, you know, from living together on, I felt like me and you have always had that kind of relationship, whether it's about the church or, you know, women or minorities, whatever it is. My natural feeling has always, because I've had depression and anxiety my whole life, it's always been, like, to love people, to listen to people, to, like, to build up people. So I'm sure of all the people I can think of, you would, even though I don't remember that, you would probably be the first person because you're the person I could talk to that'd be like, yeah, duh. You know, like,
you're like, oh, Kina has a bunch of gay friends. Like, she's safe to talk to.
But yeah, I remember that. And, it was just, it's been an interesting friendship, like, seeing all of our friends also kind of slowly come to realizations, and, like, now we all just, like, we're none of us are in the church anymore, but we still, like, go camping together and have Christmas together, and, like,
Christmas,
it's the best. Yeah, and there's no pretense. We just are who we are, and we, like,
wonderful.
Spend time together.
Yeah.
And it's so great.
I'm a fan.
And there's been, you know, There's been some famous stories with you.
You have lies. Lies. I did not realize this podcast is full of lies.
Some dietary restrictions. You've definitely ninja'd me a couple times. For example, famous birthday camping trip. Oh, Akina and Andrew decided, Aris loves chili, so we're going to make a big pot of chili for Aris's birthday. And come to find out later, it was vegan chili.
Okay, first of all, everyone who loved you went on an 8-hour one-way trip to go camping.
Uh-huh.
We, figured out, there was vans rented, all this stuff. Andrew makes a huge pot of chili, like he always says. He made it, instead of putting ground beef in it, he put, vegan ground beef in it.
Mm-hmm.
No one could taste the difference.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And then after it all, he let people know that it was vegan, and that's when the hissy fit started.
You dosed me.
And I made skillet cornbread, which was tasty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're complaining about nothing.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but we've had a lot of fun times, done a lot of fun things, and it's interesting how you don't always expect, you don't really know who your best friends are going to be, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure that when I met you in Berkeley, you never thought, this white kid that thinks he's black that's super loud is going to be, one of my best friends, but somehow, we get along, you know? It's crazy.
I feel I keep thinking, we've come so far since we were that age, but we also haven't gone anywhere. I'm still a dorky art kid at heart.
Mm-hmm.
You're still a guy who loves Tupac so much
forever.
And I mean, I guess you could say we've wised up and we're how we were talking about how we were so ignorant and taught really kind of hateful things growing up about pretty much everyone, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was so much homophobia and as well as sexism and racism in the church.
Mm-hmm.
But at our hearts, when we were teenagers, I feel like we were still we had friends of all different kinds and we loved them.
100%,
yeah. Yeah, I feel I don't know where I was going with that, but I just feel we've gone so far, but also just returned back to the beginning.
Yeah, it's cool because I think that we were instrumental, our group in helping each other leave and also just be who we really are, you know?
Yeah, it felt like there were a few years in there where when Andrew and I were slowly leaving, we took our time, and then it felt like for a few years it was can we not hang out with everyone? Because no one knew we didn't know where everyone was.
Yeah.
And we were worried if you open up to someone who's still in the church, are they going to tell on you? Is it going to be this big thing?
Mm-hmm.
Before we're ready to talk about it? And then after a while we just realized oh no, everyone's left. let's go get drunk
together. Yeah, let's all get drunk and talk about
it.
Yeah, it was crazy times. But it's cool because as long as I've known you, even to this day, obviously not for a year, but you're still doing art, and I've been able to meet so many people from the art world that you know, and they're so cool, and yeah, it's a dope world, and you connected me to the art world in a lot of ways, you know?
I mean, it's weird, but 2020, I had, a lot of art shows, actually. I was in, I had one solo show, and I was in three group shows. And, of course, they were, always at, the height of some coronavirus surge, so, a lot of them got, cut back and stuff, but it was actually quite a busy year for me.
It was weird. I went to one of your shows, and it was by appointment, right?
Yeah.
So I went, and then nobody was in there. It was just your art and me and the people in my pod that I went with. And it was it was so bizarre because I'm just kind of looking at your stuff, but usually the last couple of shows that I went to, you would be there, and then other artists and other people that I would mingle with are there, and it's a whole vibe, you know. And then it was not as fun because I couldn't play one of my classic Aris and the Artist pranks. Like the one famous one.
Showing up in camo.
Yeah. Well, I told Akina, I was like, your friends are going to judge me. They're judgy in the art community. And she was like, no, they're not. They're so sweet. They're so nice. And then I was like, I'm going to go there in an American flag camo hat and a shirt, and they're all going to talk about me. And you were like, no, they're not. They're so sweet. They would never do that. And then I went, and it was funny because, like, I was talking to some people, and everyone was really nice. And, like, I went outside, and there was a girl smoking a joint, and she, like, passed it to me, and I smoked a joint with her. And I think she's one of your good friends. But anyway, it was, like, lovely. And then there was, like, an art show where they like, did some, like, thing. And then we left, and you, like, called me, and you're like, they're all talking shit about you. It was so funny.
People who were like, because you also came like towards the end of the night, and so there weren't as many people there.
Uh-huh.
And so they were like, wait. And sometimes when you're at an art show, an art opening, like weirdos show up.
Wow.
Like there's, hopefully I don't get in trouble. There's this guy who's like infamous in the art world for like showing up, and then he like always has his camera, so he like wants to take a picture of you in front of your art, and he says it's for his newsletter, and it's like always like a little
creeper, creepy. So, like, is there a newsletter?
I think there is, but
Daily Creeper.
Yeah. So, yeah. So when you left, they were like, "Wait, who is that guy in the camo hat?"
I was thinking like, okay, before I leave, I'll find Akina and I'll give her a hug and a kiss in the cheek and then I'll leave. Then I was like, no, it's better if I just leave because then they won't know that we're friends.
Yeah.
But it was funny because even then I didn't know anyone and there's people like talking shit about me. But like I said, I went outside and one of your friends was like super sweet to me. Also, she passed a joint. We had a good time.
They weren't like talking shit. It was more like a couple of girlfriends being like, just like kind of checking in, being like, yeah. Oh yeah, like I didn't know that guy.
Yeah, who was he?
Yeah, or yeah.
But anyway, it's been really cool, and yeah, if people want to find your art and like your stuff, do you have like a website or a book or a place you sell?
I have a website. I don't update it very often, and I'm not on Instagram. I update Instagram periodically too. Usually you can find me just by Googling my name because it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my website is akinacox.com, and then my Instagram is just akinacox.
And that is if they want to buy like your zines or see your art or your work?
There's I think some of my zines, I think I have a web store, but I haven't updated it lately.
Uh-huh.
People usually buy them off of different other stores. There's a store in LA called Ooga Booga, and there's one in New York called Printed Matter, and they sell some of my zines.
Okay. I'll put in the Instagram notes, I'll put a link afterwards to that.
But I've been really bad at uploading and being active online. It's overwhelming.
It's all good. I'll get the people there. I know I've had people ask me to put links and stuff. So that's something smart. I got to get better at. Yeah, I've linked everyone's Instagram to the page, but I want to make sure that if they are a creator, I want people to see their content.
Yeah.
So I'll do my best to put that on there as well.
It's all good. I feel like people just Google me if you care. It doesn't.
Okay, just Google her if you care. Right,
no,
Akina.
Is there a lightning round?
We are moving on to the lightning round now. The lightning round.
Oh no.
Brought to you by my friend Leandre Pierre. Okay.
Hi, Leandre. I really liked your episode.
All right, here's the lightning round questions.
Okay.
The first one, the aliens come down and they're like, Akina, we're going to blow this whole world up if you don't take us to the best piece of art ever created.
Oh, the best art.
Where do you take them? What do you show them?
This is the sign of how much Andrew has rubbed off on me.
Oh, God.
But I was thinking about in Dragon Ball.
Yes!
when the God of War wants to blow up Earth, and then one of the characters gives him a cup of, instant ramen.
Mm-hmm.
And he loves it so much he doesn't blow up Earth. And that's what I was thinking about when you're asking me.
You're thinking about giving them ramen, instant ramen?
Okay, but artwork. I don't know, like, what an alien would like and what senses
the alien wants your personal favorite artwork.
So I feel like there's many different. I feel like it's unfair to make me choose.
But well, the Earth is going to get destroyed, so NBD.
But I could. I'm just saying. I've talked about this with some of my girlfriends who are artists. It feels like we have like art grandmas, where there's like different artists who might have died before you're born, especially like women artists, where you're like, that lady, I love her, and I love everything about her.
Hmm.
And I've like traveled to New York by myself, like for a weekend just to see a big show that they were in or something. So I feel like my art grandmas are Hilma af Klint, Agnes Martin, Leonora Carrington is a big one. I have a selfie that I took that I'll show you later where I'm in front of one of Leonora Carrington's paintings. And my face is like really excited and I look crazy. But,
I definitely want to see that.
She was this amazing artist who was also a writer. And she wrote this short story called The Hyena, which is about like a girl who doesn't want to go to a fancy ball, so she sends a hyena. She like dresses up a hyena instead.
That's freaking awesome.
Instead, but she also had a crazy life where she was living in Europe right before the Nazis came, and the Nazis came and took her boyfriend, who was a famous artist named Max Ernst, and so she went crazy with like grief and had no idea what was happening, and she got thrown in an institution, and then she like wrote about being thrown in an institution, which is really interesting because you think like, was she actually crazy? Because she was living in Nazi occupied Europe and her boyfriend was taken by the police, like that sounds like a pretty sane reaction to what was going on. And then she got spirited away and then lived in Mexico City the rest of her life. And she makes really amazing surrealist paintings of like weird animals and weird ladies like hovering in the air.
Nice.
So everyone should look her up.
So is it safe to assume the aliens would kill all the men on the planet after they looked at this art?
There were men in the paintings too.
Like dead men or what?
No, I mean like she married she like had several love affairs and she like several husbands. She had two sons, one of which made a museum for her in Mexico. So I don't understand why you think she's a man hater. I feel like maybe we have more feminism talk to go over.
Oh my god. Okay, next question. Next question.
Now I'm gonna go home and just think of like all these other artworks I should have mentioned.
That's how it always is. As soon as the mic turns off, you god think of like it. A thousand
this
things.
This is really annoying. Wait, can I just like.
It's okay.
You... I feel like there's like artwork where I'm like.
I'll ask you another question, and then if you think of it, you could just say it.
Okay.
So the aliens are like, that art was really cool. Now we want to do something else. Akina, we know that you love horses and riding horses.
Uh-huh.
We know that that's like your favorite thing. We want to ride horses with you in cute hats. What horse do you put the alien on for it to have the best time possible?
Again, it depends on like the size of the alien.
He is exactly your size.
But I feel like if they're exactly your size. Horses, I feel like an alien would like to be on a Clydesdale, aka like a Budweiser horse.
Aren't they like ginormous?
They're ginormous, but they're like gentle giants where they like move. They're called like, in horse terminology, they're like called cold-blooded because they're like just like a thoroughbred would be a hot-blooded horse where it's like about to buck at anything and it's prancing around and it's like skittish. And then these Clydesdales are just like mellow sweetie pies. And plus they have really cute fur around their ankles, like that little like hair tufts down there. I feel like they would like a Clydesdale.
A Clydesdale? That's a good answer. That's a good answer. Okay. Next question.
Oh, wait. I can go back, though.
Yes, you can.
This is cheating a little bit because it's not an artist or even a single work of art, but the Hammer Museum had a show called Radical Women a few years ago, and I loved, like, every single piece in it, and it was mostly women from Latin America who made work in the 70s and 80s, and I felt like it was the first time I had seen artwork that I felt like I truly related to, because a lot of these women were making work in a dictator, under a dictatorship, like in their country.
Mm-hmm.
And so their work was like really funny because you can use humor to like have multiple meanings. Or it's like kind of just like going, it's like not very direct. It's like kind of indirect work. And there was work about the body and stuff. And it just felt like I had grown up going to art classes where they just show like all these like important male artists who are very brash and stuff. And this is the first time where I felt like these artists were speaking my language, because I felt like it's definitely not the same thing. I don't want to say like growing up in the church was like growing up in a dictatorship, but yeah. Like there's similarities in
mm-hmm.
that.
Definitely.
Anyway.
Well, I just thought of this. It's not. I have one more question for the lightning round, but I just thought of this one too. Okay, so you were not taught about too many female artists growing up. Are there four female artists that you could name instead of the Ninja Turtles? There's four female versions of them. Who would they be?
So the Ninja Turtles are
Leonardo, Donatello, yeah. Michelangelo, Raphael.
Yeah. So they are from the Renaissance. So a lot of work got destroyed, or a lot of women weren't allowed to make work. Both a lot of times a lot of women weren't allowed to be artists in the Renaissance, but there were women Renaissance artists, but their works got overlooked when they would write the history books. But the most famous one is Artemisia Gentileschi. She was so fucking badass. She was raped by one of her art teachers, and she brought charges against him. And this is like in Italy, I think in the 1600s. I mean, of course he got away, blah, blah, blah. You know what she did? She painted his face in her paintings. Like, there's this really amazing story of Judith from the Bible hacking the head off of Holofernes. And this, yeah, it's this like biblical story that a lot of artists have painted. So she painted it, and she made him being the one with his head being hacked off.
Damn.
So she would definitely be up there. But there was also several other painters around that time. There was Judith Leister, who was a Dutch artist. There was Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun. And then there was a fourth one that I'm fucking blanking on, but yeah, you could totally do a Ninja Turtles, but with just lady artists.
This is something I'm just thinking about when you were saying that, but were there ever times in history when women painted famous things and men took credit for it? Was that like a thing?
So there's definitely been instances. I feel like all my art history is like rushing back and I'm forgetting everything and remembering everything all at once. I also want to clarify, like, I didn't really learn about that many women artists in school, but again, my mom like had this thing where she was like, I'm an artist, I'm a woman, there were women in the past, like, so she like actually taught me a lot about that. Even relatively recently, you could say that there have been men who've taken women's ideas. I mean, even it's so complicated, but essentially there's even ideas about cave paintings of just like always in every textbook assume that they've been made by men, but actually they're finding out that like maybe most of them were painted by women. Because they can look at the length of certain finger bones and the different ratios of them point to like this was probably a male hand versus a female hand.
Damn.
And a lot of the cave paintings include like the outline of the artist's hand as part of the work.
That's super interesting. Kind of like the Thanksgiving turkey trace that you
it's
do with
exactly
your hand.
It's exactly like that.
Yep.
It's exactly like that.
I'm an artist, I know. All right, the last question of the lightning round. I know that you're a huge fan of the Amazons. Mm-hmm. Who would you say, if you could have like an all-star team of modern day Amazons, who would be the modern day Amazons? So like if you're like, ladies, we're fucking breaking off. We're gonna start our own world. We got an island that's just for us.
Yeah.
Who are gonna be like the leaders of the new Amazons?
Okay. So I love reading about the Amazons, which if anyone wants to, there's a great book by, I think her name is Adrienne Meyer, who's...
It's a good last name.
I think it's M-A-Y-O-R, though. Oh, like Mayer, maybe?
I'm out.
She's a professor, I think, at... What's that? Starts with an S. It's in NorCal.
Stanford?
Yeah. She's a Stanford professor. She wrote a book on the Amazons. It's really great. I just like that it was this group of women who were totally badass, who escaped via horseback from the Greeks, who their exploits were just thought to be so fantastical that they must have been made up.
Hmm.
And that, like, centuries of male scholars said that they couldn't possibly exist. And yet, once again, now they're finding out that there's actual artifacts left behind that probably came from them.
I mean, if there was such thing as a Sparta, why wouldn't there be such thing as, you know? Like, you know, obviously there were radicals during that time.
It's what is so interesting is, like, studying these older ideas just shows, reflects more on, like, how you're thinking about them and where you're coming from. And so, yeah, there's a lot of amazing scholarship about them, and they seem to be total matriarchal badass ladies who, like, smoked a lot of pot and just, like, did their thing in the Central Asian steppes. That being said, I know she's, like, not always in everyone's good books, but going back to Sister Act, I love Whoopi Goldberg so much.
I love Whoopi Goldberg too.
I feel like, as even though I was, like, a little white kid, I feel like I did feel out of place in the town I grew up in. And she was, like, I grew up in, like, the time where, like, all the good Whoopi movies came out. And she was, like, one of the biggest stars. And she was, like, funny and hilarious and smart and strong. And I just feel like I don't know who I would have had if I didn't have her to look up to.
So she's in the Amazon.
So she would be on my island.
Yeah.
Okay. Just me and her.
Just you and her. No, starting the Amazons.
Me and her and anyone else who showed up with a horse.
As long as there's horses and cool chicks, then it's yeah, all good.
I mean, guys could probably come along too. But, yeah. I feel like... The thing that I am interested in the Amazons is that, like, they had a different culture than the Greeks. They were probably started from a cult of one of the Greek gods, probably from Demeter.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to, like, fight against the Greeks, and then they were defeated, and then they, like, ended up being captured, and then they broke out, and then they ran away. But I just, like, was always interested in, like, when do you fight and when do you, like, build something new? Especially, like, the past few years, it just seems like an important question. Like, with all of our society's institutions, like, when do you say, like, oh, we can reform jails, we can reform ICE, we can reform our government? And when do you say, like, hey, like, this institution is not working out? Or, like, the church.
Yeah. No, but, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I feel like there's no right answer, or I'm sure there are right answers, actually. I just don't know them, or I'm not smart enough, but I do feel like us drinking beer or going to some crybaby's birthday in the middle of nowhere.
Wow. On my own podcast.
Just, like, hanging out like that, I feel like, is building something new.
Absolutely, it is.
Out of something that didn't work.
I feel like we're, with our friend group, I mean, it's all inclusive, and I feel like we're all trying to be the best versions of ourselves. And, like, you know, we're all still growing and unlearning what we've learned.
Yeah.
But we're also super down. Like, we're down with, you know, biopic people, we're down with LGBTQ+ people, we're down with We just want a world where we take care of each other, uphold each other, love each other, empower each other. And yeah. I think that that's what's dope, is we're being true now to ourselves, truer than we ever were allowed to be.
I think what helps is that, like, I think some people, when you hear, like, oh, don't, when people say, like, oh, this term is actually kind of racist, like, don't use it, or, oh, you said this thing and that's a little bit harmful to a group, I feel like for some people it feels like an attack to hear that, and it's like hard for them to grapple with. But I feel like for me, I grew up like so backwards, like just like so conservative, that I'm just learning new stuff all the time, and I feel like I'm good at it, where I'm like, people tell me like, oh, this thing, like this term might be like a little bit harmful, or, you know, yeah. like the idea of like, don't say gay or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I just feel like I've been in this mode of like, for like, no, it feels like forever, just like unlearning things, and I feel like I'm good at it, and I feel like most of our group is pretty good at just being like, oh yeah, that's another thing we have to unlearn.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm very lucky to have, you know, a friend like you that, like I said, taught me about, you know, started talking to me about feminism when, you know, when we first became friends, because it is very hard to not take things personally. And it, being, you know, a white person in America right now, there's a lot coming our way that we were taught, and the way that we grew up, it's, you know, the complete opposite of those things, all the yeah. luxuries that we've had, you know, as white people in America. So it's all about learning to not be personally offended
yeah.
when people say, you know, I feel like this, I don't like this word, I don't, you know, when we talk about white fragility and white privilege, I had to learn as a white person not to take those things personally.
Yeah.
When a person of color, or, you know, a queer person or whatever, they're talking about their experience and their feelings, I have to like put myself out of the equation and look at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So I've been lucky to have people like you and other people in my life that have like baby stepped me in that direction.
I like baby stepping people. I feel like I'm learning all the time, and then I feel like I can help do my part by turning around and like explaining it to the person next to me or behind me. It feels like it's just like we're all learning all the time.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on my podcast, Akina. I appreciate
Anytime.
It.
Thanks for finally inviting me.
Oh my God. Don't even. Oh my God. Oh, you. There's so many people that have dropped that bomb on me. You butts. All right. Is there anything you want to say to the people before we get out of here? Any last comments?
I think I'm good.
All right. Love you, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.